M24. Number 2A.
Now, in this first translation, we have God and then divine principle, life, truth, love, and then soul, spirit, mind. In the first rendering of Mrs. Eddy of this chapter in 1891, that was a very important stage in Mrs. Eddy's life. She not only had the title Scientific Definition, but she also gave the order of the synonymous terms in a different way, namely, instead at the end, soul, spirit, mind, she gave mind, spirit, soul, as in the verb. And so it more or less complied with the definition. And only much later, she changed that into the order, not really much later, it was only 1 year later that she changed the order into the order as we have it now, except for the divine, and put that divine in only in 1902. 1902 was another important stage in Mrs. Eddy's life, just as afterwards, 1907-10. So, little by little, she adapted this order of synonymous terms to the true meaning. See, she had to say divine principle, because she didn't give a definition. She gave the Christ order, and the Christ is divine. She had to give it in the order source, that she could indicate through the order of the synonymous term that it had to do with a translation from God to man, to understanding. And the only way she could do that is by putting first the essence of God, namely the divine principle, life, truth, and love, that is the essence of God, and show how, through a true translation of the nature, she could bring near to the understanding the nature of God. Now, I don't know, I hope you haven't understood what I said. It took me also a few years. The principle includes all synonymous terms. And if we take principle in the middle of the word order, we have, so to say, two wings. One wing, mind, spirit, soul. The other wing, life, truth, and love. And these two wings are in import different, because mind, spirit, soul have only to do with defining the nature of God, whereas the divine principle is really life, truth, and love. That's God's true essence. What God really himself is life, truth, and love. And mind, spirit, soul are those means, those divine means, I quite agree, those divine means which are enabling us to understand God. But they are not the true essence of God. So that in absolute Christian science, we only think on the level of divine principle, which is life, truth, and love. Because thinking on the level of absolute Christian science, we are not interested how to convince mortals that God is God. But the moment I have to convince mortals, to translate God to mortals so as to convince him, so that mortals understand the essence of God, I have to show, Mrs. Eddy has to show that through the synonymous term, mind, spirit, soul. How on earth can I explain that? I just feel I can't explain it at the moment. But you would, because, you see, and that is important for the whole chapter, because how do we get hold of that which is, through mind. But life, truth, and love is if I think about it or not think about it. I don't need mind to make God be what he is, life, truth, and love. But the way, you see, I get hold of the consciousness that God is what he is, namely life, truth, and love, I need mind. And only that mind which is as big as God is able to comprehend life, truth, and love. The second difficulty which I have in seeing that God is what he is, namely life, truth, and love, is that matter seems to be real. That matter, the material universe, seems to be the very, very opposite of what God states he is, namely life, truth, and love. And so I have to see through the true sense of matter, namely of spirit, that the material sense and the material objective universe is an untrue universe, because all is spiritual, all is spirit. So that taking away a second false nature, the third point in the false nature is that my sense testimony testifies against the fact that God is life, truth, and love. God is life, truth, and love if I look with my eyes or don't look with my eyes. If I look at it with a false testimony, the testimony of the physical senses, or if I look at it through spiritual sense. God remains what he is, namely life, truth, and love. So spiritual sense or soul sense is that way which translates to me, to mortals, really the nature of God as life, truth, and love. I don't think I got it over. But on this hinges everything. This hinges everything. Once more. God is, in his essence, life, truth, love. He is, and therefore is life. And because he is, he affirms himself, it's true, this isness, it's truth. And it's infinite, all-encompassing, it's love. But this nature, this essence of God, I should somehow get hold of through understanding, should be translated to mortals to the point of understanding. But there is something which testifies against that understanding. What is it that testifies against it? It's mortal mind, human thinking. It's the material universe, the apparent actuality of a material existence. It's the sense testimony that testifies against it. These are the three enemies against understanding that God is what he is, life, truth, and love. So if those three can be translated, if mortal mind can be translated to the point of divine mind, if the sense that the material universe is true can be translated in seeing that substance is spirit, if the testimony of the five physical senses, which is limited and upside down and I don't know how false, can be corrected through soul sense, then my understanding is so in line with God that it can accept the actuality that God is just life, truth, and love. Did that get over? It doesn't matter if it doesn't get over. One has so much time to think about it. We have a long winter and those wonderful evenings in the winter, and it gets dark very early and one can sit down and think for hours about these things. And then they come. Finally, we will be thinking much more on the plane of absolute Christian science. That's coming. One can see that coming. and where the accent of our whole consciousness will be much more on life, truth, and love. The only calculus of life, truth, and love, of truth, life, and love, of life and love, of truth and love, all the combinations of the three essential qualities. And when one has that standpoint, then from that altitude, from that throne of grace, somehow we can look down, if I may say so, on mind, spirit, soul, or on soul, spirit, mind, and see that life, truth, and love are constantly at work to precipitate itself on, as it is here, on the false on the false testimony of the physical senses, and say, no, life, truth, and love is identified everywhere as ideas of life, truth, and love. That's what soul then does. Then life, truth, and love precipitates itself as spirit and say, it's not true that the material universe is real, because all are ideas of spirit, and therefore only the reflections and infinite classified individualized ideas of spirit are real. And it's an infinitely diversified spiritual universe. And then life, truth, and love says, I precipitate myself on the human mind as the divine mind, and enlightening the divine mind, and enlightening the human mind to see that there is only the divine mind in operation, that all there is idea. Yes. So, in this way, we begin to feel that the essence of being is life, truth, and love, and that the first three synonymous term of mind, spirit, soul have nothing else to do but to adjust, to bring into accord understanding with divine understanding. Then she goes on, after God, to man, and says, man is God's spiritual idea, individual, perfect, eternal. First, in the early edition, she had here God's universal idea. And then later on, she changed it into individual. She changed the universal into the individual. And now we begin to realize why she had to do that, because it wasn't correct. The purpose of the translation is to translate the whole into the individual idea. That's the great purpose. To say, what do I have if I have an infinite whole? What I need is that in this specific case, the infinite has to manifest itself. So it must be individualized. And so she changed that in very, very late. She changed that in 1907. Into God's spiritual idea, individual. Hinting again that we have to see what this translation wants to accomplish. It wants to accomplish that the whole is an infinite individuality, that the whole is not there to be just always the whole, but to have its infinite individual expression diversified, but always equal to the nature of God. Then comes idea, an image in mind, and then she turns and says, the immediate object of understanding. She gives first the definition of idea from above, so to say, from God, namely from mind, capital M, you see, and then in order to show that understanding is always understanding, no matter if it's God's understanding or man's true understanding, she she gives it from an objective sense, the immediate object of understanding is the idea. So as to say, to show that understanding is not a quality of man. Understanding is a quality of God. Mind, capital M, understands. We don't understand. All that can understand is mind. So mind gives that understanding as idea, and we have that understanding as the immediate object of our contemplation. And in this way, it combines the subjective with the objective. And then, naturally, she starts with the second translation, which shows the resolving of a false objective universe into that ideal universe. That's the second translation. The second translation is, as Mrs. Eddy has said in miscellaneous writing, science understood translates matter back into spirit, or into mind. We can see this retranslation translates back, this retranslation of something that has been falsely translated. We have seen that matter is a misunderstanding of spirit, a misapprehension, a misstatement of spirit, and this misstatement has to be retranslated. The false translation has to be set right by translating it back into its original. So we know that very well, what comes now with the 3 degrees, and you can read that in John Morgan's book in extenso. Is that a word in English, in extenso? Yes, good. That retranslation ends with the 3rd degree of understanding. That same term with which she ended the first translation, so as to show that the whole 2 translations hinge on understanding, that mind translates itself to the point of understanding, and that that understanding is really that which resolves the 1st degree and the 2nd degree and brings out the word order of the 3rd degree. Quite interestingly, in her first edition of this chapter, she called this 3rd degree not understanding, but she called it spiritual salvation. And I can see what she meant, because here, really, the salvation process comes to a climax. It saves the 1st degree out of itself. It saves the 2nd degree out of itself, until finally, in the 3rd degree, mortal mind disappears and man in the image of God appears, and that we call salvation. But later on she changed it into understanding, because she could see that salvation is a matter of understanding. That the very thing she wanted to depict with these 2 translations is that everything hinges on understanding. She didn't want to show that the Christ does save, but she wants to say how it saves. Not just present that it does save and that he is the Savior, but that the method, the means to save is understanding. So in the 3rd degree, mortal mind disappears. Now, let us review these 2 translations in a big line. Namely, are they 2 translations? Mrs. Eddy does never say that they are 2 translations. We said so, for convenience sake. But it's wrong. There is only 1 translation. So for convenience sake, we made that little mistake, and now we have to correct it and see it's 1 translation. It would have been nice to put those 2 translations side by side and see that they go on simultaneously. That there is not the translation going on the 1st one and then after a while or next morning the 2nd translation. But that the very at the very moment that the first translation goes on, the second translation is put into operation, that they are simultaneous. Just as she said at the beginning of the chapter that the Immanuel, or God with us, that's the first translation, God with us, God translated to mortals, is the ever-present, the sovereign ever-present, what does she say, delivering the children of men from every ill. So the Immanuel, the first translation, is at once, at the same time, only seen from another point of view, is the second translation, the deliverer, from the first degree, from the second degree, so as to establish the third degree of spiritual reality. Therefore, we could see that what we call the first translation is the cause. The second is the effect. But we know that mind is both cause and effect. But when analyzed, we have to do a step-by-step presentation of what's going on in nowness. So the first translation causes the second, and that is important because whenever we want to see how to translate any situation which is disharmonious, which is of the nature of the first degree, back into the true sense of being, that we never start by considering first the second translation. That we are not going out from the first degree analyzing what is wrong, and from the wrong situation, not drawing any conclusion from the wrong situation, not trying to improve the wrong situation out of the wrong situation through moral means, through moral efforts, in order to reach finally out into the third degree. That's religion. See, religion is, if we have only the second translation, religion tries to do that from that standpoint. It says the mortal is a sinner, the mortal is a fallen man, and now, that's the first degree, now, through the second degree, through the qualities of the second degree, by being good, by being human, by being affectionate, having faith, meekness, and temperance, and hope, he may have a chance to get into heaven. If he, with all his sweat on his brow, he tries to have hope and faith, he may get out of it. And it's a burdensome way, it's the religious way, to improve the mortal. The science way is to start with the first translation. And the first translation is that translation of rest and peace and certainty of understanding. It's a state of spiritual consciousness where you not fight against the situation, where you are not troubled with the situation, where you have not to stand up against the situation, but where you are one with God and God one with us. And the better we can put the whole situation out of sight and out of hearing distance, if possible, and out of our feeling concept, and just remain in the wonderful sense of Immanuel, where God is with us, where life, truth and love is my mind, where life, truth and love is my spirit, my moving spirit, my ordering spirit, my purifying spirit, where life, truth and love is my soul, is that which identifies for me, which is my soul, which satisfied, which knows that I can awake in his likeness and be satisfied, where I know that nothing is going on but the identical idea as life, truth and love. If I stay in that life, truth and love is my governing, ruling principle, that life, truth and love is my life, my inspiration, my vitality,
that life, truth, and love is my truth. Therefore, that I don't have to see what other truth and what other lie is going on. Life, truth, and love is my truth. I don't have to defend myself. I don't have to argue with anybody about my truth, about my manhood, about my rightness. Life, truth, and love is my truth. It stands for me. It upholds me. It forms me. And life, truth, and love is my love. Life, truth, and love is my comforter, is my savior, is that which encircles me, mothers me, keeps me, that never lets me fall, never lets me down. Life, truth, and love is my love, my mother. Where I'm embedded into it, where I'm encircled into it, where I feel warm in it, where I feel protected in it. There's no struggle about it. It's just resting in it. That's the first translation. And the first translation is also the second translation. It's the ever-present that is delivering man from every ill. And therefore we don't have to translate now this vision into the material problem. It translates itself. It works itself. Because my consciousness is now filled with the Emmanuel. It's filled more and more with the Emmanuel. And that is working changes. Except the Lord built the house, they build in vain. But also except the Lord turns over and turns over, nobody else can turn it over. Because the Lord is alone the Christ. And I just have that certainty in it, that I can just trust in that oneness of God and man. And that is translating the second translation. I don't have to move a finger, so to say. Except the Lord tells me to move a finger, and then I move it. Except the Lord tells me to say, and I say it. But it's the Lord then, it's the first translation that gives the impulsion to do that which is right in the first degree, that which is too right in the second degree, that which is right to come out in the third degree. But it's God doing it. Can you see how different it is to work from the point of view of the Christ science than from metaphysics? From knowing the truth about this and knowing the truth about that, and shall I do this and shall I do that? But to let the infinite operation of the divine principle operate. And it always operates. And if I'm the woman that takes the leaven, if I'm the woman that accepts it, say, I accept it. I accept that only life, truth, and love is going on. No matter how the first degree looks like. No matter how it looks like. No matter if the first degree shows me passion, appetite, fear, jealousy, envy, and so on. No matter what it looks like. It isn't anything. All that there is going on is life, truth, and love. And when I see that, I see, and life, truth, and love, a soul translates itself always only as ideas of life, truth, and love. That's the purpose of soul. And I see a spirit that life, truth, and love, through that translation of soul, only brings out infinite possibilities of ideas.